Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
White House, we have 19 Christmas trees in every corner of the White House. We have a giant bow made out of pipe cleaners. We have 350 pounds of gingerbread house that you'll get to see that took our wonderful pastry chef Bill Yasses and his team an entire month to create.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells
swing. All right, it's the Savage Nation. What do you want from her? She's got a job to do. That's all. You know, it's hard traveling to Spain and Indonesia and India. It's a tough job. You got to come back for Christmas and say that you have Christmas trees in every room. Then you got to say you go to church every Sunday and carry a stage Bible. It's a tough job. And we all have a job to do. I mean, you can only be cynical up to a point. I read today that a bacteria has been found that thrives on arsenic, which upsets all of the knowledge of biochemistry and life on Earth. It means that there could be life on far, on distant planets. A bacteria that thrives on the toxic poison arsenic is amazing. It gives new meaning to the Van Bulo case for sure. But I ask you, what is the antidote to arsenic poisoning? Do any of you know? I do. Anyone who can figure out quickly and tell us what the antidote is to arsenic poisoning will get a free copy of TUP. Arsenic, we've all heard about it. We don't know what it is. We know it's a poison. In fact, it was used last weekend in a TV series where a man was poisoned with arsenic. Arsenic, element number 33, has a long and nefarious history. It's known to be a poison in the 15th and 16th centuries. The famous, wealthy, powerful Italian family of Borgia, I almost said Pelosi, used arsenic as their favorite poison for political assassinations. It's even been suggested that Napoleon was poisoned by arsenic-tainted wine served to him while in exile. It sounds like the house wine in San Francisco. But the fact of the matter is, arsenic is a very toxic poison. And some people know what we're talking about. We know it's a heavy metal. And it shares many toxic characteristics with other heavy metals such as lead and mercury. But what you should know is arsenic is actually found in most places in the environment. It is very abundant in the Earth's crust. It is the 20th most abundant metal in the Earth's crust. It's the 14th most abundant in seawater. And believe it or not, you have arsenic in your own body. It's the 12th most abundant in the human body. And so therefore, you can't rush to judgment. Oh, well, we don't want any arsenic in our body because there are some actual values to arsenic. You may not know that it's used as a green pigment and that it's also used as a pesticide. And of course, it's used to kill people. And whether you know it or not, did you remember when you used to treat wood with a green kind of chemical? I had a wooden boat many years ago. Tarangi was its name. 1969, I had a wooden sailboat, 22 feet long, a 22-foot oak-clad sailboat. And every time we hauled it out in the Alawai Yacht Harbor, which was once a year or so, you had to, you know, do the bottom over again. And the bottom paint was a green kind of paint. And it was used to treat architectural and other woods and to keep them resistant to pests, chromated copper arsenate. It was a fabulous product, but the EPA banned it in 2003 because it worked. And the reason they banned it is because it worked. You can't have a product that works. And many of you who know wood know that wood is subject to pesticide infestation. And that's why the EPA is in existence, to make sure that all of your wooden products degenerate rapidly in order to help the environment. Anyhow, you are probably getting some arsenic in your shellfish and seafood, as you are getting lead and mercury, whether you know it or not. It's also been found to contaminate rice. Well, anyway, I don't want to go on and on about it. Many of you are probably bored already. You'd rather me talk about Wrangell or TARP or the fact that the government bailed out General Electric and MSNBC. Now, the reason I jumped to this is because since I was talking about microbes that feed on arsenic, I immediately thought of the hosts of NBC and MSNBC and how they had to be supported by the taxpayer. Of course, I'm not shocked by this to find out that the government bailed out General Electric, which, of course, owns the bacteria who perform on MSNBC. But we can go to your questions. When I asked you what is the antidote to arsenic poisoning, I immediately got an answer. And it came right out of New York from WOR. Lewis, you're on the Savage Nation. Answer, please.
The answer is selenium, Michael.
Bingo. Now, the reason you knew this right away is you're a doctor?
No, actually, I'm a lawyer. But
a lawyer?
Yeah.
You're a lawyer and you know chemistry? What kind of law do you practice?
Actually, estate planning. So I deal with...
Oh, well, okay, so that's why you're familiar with arsenic, because you know the Van Bulo case.
Well, Michael, I learned it in high school. I actually went to a very good private Catholic high school in Staten Island, and we learned that in...
That's amazing. What's interesting, though, is that selenium unto itself can be a toxic poison. You know that as well.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing that you have this knowledge because you went to a really fine high school. It's amazing what was taught in high schools. I don't know how many years ago you went. What was it, 10, 20?
Not very long ago, Michael, not very long.
So the Catholic schools are still putting out good education. It's good to hear.
Well, you know, you get lucky every now and then. Some of us like to actually read instead of watching the garbage on television, so.
Well, you're getting a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You fell right into my spider web. You're getting a free copy because you like to read. Before I take a break from this arsenic, it's an interesting story, really. And I want to thank that caller for his vast knowledge and the fact that he listens to me on a radio in Staten Island in the middle of a storm, or whatever the weather is on the east. I love it. I mean, I'm out on the West Coast. It's miserable, horrible, cold, damp, the kind of weather I love. Thank God the dreaded sun is gone. But, you know, when I see snow falling, I get so, I don't know, I still have the Currier and Ives imagery in my mind. And so I love the snow. It's not like I have to travel to the east to get snow. I mean, we got 10 feet of snow up in the High Sierras 2 weeks ago, as I told you on the Savage Nation. I may go up there over the holidays, you know, get myself a cabin. I'm a simple man at the end of the day. I'd like a simple log kind of cabin that's fully wiring for modern electronics. Because truthfully, I can only take a cabin for so long. I do need a computer. I need cable television, and I need a computer. Otherwise, I can't be in a cabin. I mean, the days of me being able to just stare at a snowfield are long over. The Currier is dead, so is Ives. So anyway, when you read this morning that NASA is reporting that they found a bacteria that can live on arsenic, it's pretty amazing when you consider it, because when you go out into outer space, and we've done it, I mean, there's been a lot of exploration of outer space. And they've discovered that some planets don't have any minerals and an organism that we know could live on. Some of them have too much arsenic, for example. Now we find out the bacteria can thrive in arsenic. So the organism has adapted to arsenic and is thriving in it. And it reminds me of people who live in New York City. In other words, if you live in an environment that's polluted, you'd think everybody would get sick sick and weak and die. They don't. It's the same thing about human beings. We generally adapt to our environment. And sometimes people can live in the most horrendous cesspools of an environment and be strong. And now it goes back. It's interesting to me. Back in the 50s, there was a polio epidemic raging throughout America, and everybody was naturally petrified that they or their children would come down with polio, and people stopped swimming in swimming pools. I remember that age. And they didn't know what to do. I remember my father took me by the hand. They used to walk me down the dirty streets, Ludlow Street in particular, where his store was. And it was strewn with garbage and bums and winos were nearby on the Bowery. And I hated it. And he'd say to me, don't worry about it. You're going to get stronger as a result. I said, how can I get stronger by exposing me to this garbage? Dad, I mean, I may be only five, but even I can understand this is disgusting. And he looked down as though he was God, and he said to me, because by exposing you to these germs down here, your body's going to build up a resistance to them. Well, my father was right. And take a look at the people who grew up in the lily white suburbs. They vote for a guy like Obama. They have no idea that their political correctness is literally killing them in the country. And here I am. Here I am knowing what's right and what's wrong and talking to you today on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Before we leave this topic of arsenic and old lace, I want to tell you something remarkable. I have had blurry vision for a couple of years now. I'm not starting in where I need a treatment in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir like the professor and have a miracle cure. But my eyes were getting blurry from all of the computers. I didn't wear glasses till I was pretty late in life. But then, you know, with the computer every day and the books that I write and the reading the proofs and the you can, blah, blah. So my eyes are a little blurry. At night when I drive, it's a little blurry. Do you know that last night driving home from the studio, I had the vision in the dusk and then in the dark that I had when I was 18. I reminded myself I hadn't sensed this clarity since I was at Queens College in my Jaguar XK150, which was 5-6 years old at the time, a real piece of junk. And do you know why my vision cleared up yesterday? I'll tell you why. I took 24,000 units of vitamin A. I took two teaspoons of black cherry fruit preserves from France. And I will explain to you when I come back which particular berry RAF pilots took prior to going on night missions in Spitfires to fight Messerschmitts when I come back in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
When we before the break, we were talking about arsenic and arsenic poisoning because NASA has discovered a bacteria that thrives on arsenic, which is a toxic heavy metal poisoning. I was reading that frequently that patients who are exposed to arsenic poisoning have a garlic smell to their breath. And all along, I thought that Mrs. S. was cooking with garlic. God, we better put her on the stand. All along, I thought it was garlic that I was eating. How did I know? Anyway, all kidding aside, we went on to the antidote to arsenic poisoning, which is selenium. I want to tell you an interesting selenium story because many people are very heavily into nutritional supplements and they take too much selenium. Back when I was a new graduate in nutrition, back in 1978, I got my PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. Still a great institution in some departments, by the way, despite all the jokes. And so I remember reading, I was writing a book called The Skeptical Nutritionist. I think it came out in 1981 by Macmillan Publishing, okay? And I reported what I found in the literature. You know the great traveler named Marco Polo? That generally rings a bell with virtually any educated person. Marco Polo, you sure have all heard about him, right? There was a journal entry that said, at Aenos, the horse's hooves fell off. Where's Aenos? It's in Greece. What does it mean, at Aenos, the horse's hooves fell off? Well, some smart researchers went back in the latter part of the last century, and they went to Aenos in Greece. They pulled out the soil, and they did a soil analysis, and they found out that that soil in Aenos, Greece, was particularly laden with selenium. And what happened there was when the horses grazed on the grass in Aenos, Greece, their hooves fell off. Now, what does it have to do with you? 1978, I graduate. And I go, and I'm a clinical nutritionist in a small setting here in Sausalito. And I had a client at the time whose fingernails and hair was falling out. He was a young man. He was 28. He didn't know what was wrong. His hair was falling out. His nails were falling out. So being a pioneer in the field of nutrition, the real nutrition, I started to ask him what vitamins he was taking, what minerals he was taking. And one of the minerals he was taking was selenium. Selenium is so incredibly toxic that has to be taken in micrograms, and he was taking almost toxic levels of selenium. I warned him. I said, drop all selenium intake. Well, sure enough, in a few months, his nails grew back and his hair came back. Now, I'm not telling you that if you how to grow your hair and nails back, However, there are certain things you can do with virtually every part of your body that are related to nutritional deficiencies and nutritional excesses. And I really don't want to go into nutrition. It's more of a statement about the antidote to arsenic, selenium, being as toxic as arsenic when it's taken in too much, in too high a dose, you know, which is true about medicines in general. The difference between a poison and a medicine is usually a matter of dosage. I don't know if you understand that. Dosage is everything. And it's an interesting political statement unto itself, if you're following me. I don't know, maybe, I don't know if the average person wants to even hear it. We're so mind-dead from what we listen to in this country, the entertainment. Sometimes I get worried if I get too technical that you want to turn the show off because you want me to deal in stereotypes or in cartoon-like images. But let me pursue it. Let's assume you are interested in what I'm saying for the minute. I don't know what people really want to hear. You don't know in radio. At a certain point, you have to go with what you're interested in. And you assume that if the host is interested and he's bubbly enough with what he's interested in, my interest will percolate through the airwaves to your ears and you'll be interested as well. There's really no reason I have to talk about Charlie Rangel or Barack Obama or the gingerbread house put up in the White House for right now, maybe a little later. You know, I don't have to say socialist or communist every 13 seconds to keep your attention. So to make a long story short, what would you like to talk about? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Oh, I told you about my eyes, right? So I had blurry vision. Yesterday during the show, I took 3 8,000 units of vitamin A, which I never take outside of a multivitamin. And because in the winter, I always take extra vitamin A as a precaution against colds and flu. And it's worked like a charm for quite a long time. Vitamin A is one of the least well-known vitamins in society, in our society. Many of us are mega-dosing on vitamin C, which is a very good idea. I've done so for 30 years. It's kept me going. And vitamin E, very good idea. Don't believe a word that the quacks in the medical establishment tell you. They're liars, and they work for the drug companies. They want to make you believe that vitamins A and C don't work. They're complete liars, totally fraudulent medico-pharmaceutical spies. But vitamin A, how much do you know about vitamin A to protect you against colds? Okay?
Savage.
It is Thursday, you know, I mean, it is Thursday, and I remember I had a schedule that I started a while ago where Thursday was Nutrition Day, so I stumbled into it anyway. And I'm not interested in Wrangell, I'm not interested in gingerbread houses, I'm not interested in tax cuts or tax extensions, because I can't control the wheeling and dealing anyway, neither can you. What they do, they're going to do, and then we'll vote. Every 2 years they pay attention to us, and in between us little people have to talk amongst us, amongst ourselves. So I'm talking about the bacteria that thrives on arsenic, that led us to selenium, Marco Polo, at Enos, the horse's hooves fell off. The client that once had was losing his nails and his hair. I told him, what are you taking? He told me what he was taking. I said, stop the selenium. His nails grew back. And boom, here we are. So there we are. I mean, we could do a little bit more. You know, I'm thinking to turn this into a fun segment where we analyze our politicians and estimate which nutritional deficiency they may have to explain their behavior. For example, what nutritional excess does Barney Frank exhibit? Probably several different nutrients that the man imbibes in excess that would explain some of his behavior. And there are others that are clearly taking certain medications which cause the excretion of essential nutrients for primary intelligence or primarily intelligent thinking. You know, you can take certain foods which deplete you of vitamins or minerals that you may need as well. But that'll get too esoteric. I think a more interesting topic was bilberry, because I already have an answer on that. Remember I asked you about which herb did the British pilots take prior to doing night missions in their Spitfires against Messerschmitts in World War II? And I have an answer here. One of the callers knows the answer. Vince in Arizona, welcome to the program. Vince, you're a winner. What's the answer?
Yes, Mike, it's bilberry.
Bingo. Now, how did you come to know that?
Well, I'm be 79 here next month, and about 10 years ago, I was reading an article about English pilots, and they said they were dosing them pretty good for night flying.
So Now, bilberry is a relative of our blueberry. It's the European version. And and the British pilots would eat the bilberry jam prior to night vision, and it focused their vision and gave them amazing vision at the night, according, that's the folklore on it. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I read this 30 years ago. It's often associated with the improvement of night vision, and it's certainly mentioned in a popular story of World War II RAF pilots consuming bilberry jam to sharpen vision for night missions. Of course, the U.S. Navy did a recent study and found no such effect, because the U.S. Navy today, under the people who are running the U.S. Navy, would only find that Prozac works for the sailors. So, you know, you tell me what you want to do. But the fact is that bilberries contain no nutrients, such as anthocyanin pigments. And bilberry leaves were used to treat the GI ailments going back for centuries. Bilberries were used as a tonic to prevent some infections and skin diseases. There's a host and a wealth of information on blueberries and bilberries, right? You don't want to hear something? Here's a purely anecdotal story. Years ago, when I was, again, a young graduate in the field of nutrition and just in a practice, I had a friend who was a great guy, Dr. Robert Cathcart, who recently passed away. And he was a really genius MD who had left his orthopedic medical practice. He was a fine surgeon. And he was living up in Lake Tahoe. He found that his patients were getting better faster when they were using vitamins in the hospital without the doctor knowing. He would find out, like, why is this patient recovering faster from surgery and not that one? And he found out they were taking vitamin C behind his back. He left his orthopedic practice and became a nutritional doctor, and we were good friends for 30 years. Anyway, as time unfolded, I guess this would have been, what year is it? In the late 90s, he had an elderly mother, God rest her soul, Mrs. Cathcart, must have been 90-something, and she was suffering macular degeneration. Well, he called me up all excited one day, and he said, Michael, my mother listened to you with regard to bilberry, and she took it, and she got a reversal of the macular degeneration. Her ophthalmologist told her that. I said, well, I'm not surprised. Now, I'm not holding out that this is the cure for macular degeneration, but wouldn't common sense dictate that there must be some benefit to anthocyanins that are found in bilberries, and why not take them or take the nutritional supplement form if you can find it, right?
Yep.
I mean, I eat blueberries, organic blueberries, on a regular basis. I eat red grapes every night, organic red grapes. I have for years. I love grapes. That's my dessert. But I don't eat enough of the blueberry. Anyway, Vince, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Hopefully you'll take some bilberry jam prior to reading it at night under the light of a candle. So you want me to do this anymore, or you want me to shift now to the boredom of the day? It is so boring. The political world is getting boring now. I mean, really, I knew this would happen. Didn't I tell you this would happen after the election? I told you what would happen, that it's impossible to continue this game of the politics as all. But yet, I mean, the news is pretty amazing. Between the scandal of the WikiLeaker and the scandal of the fact that General Electric, MSNBC, and NBC were given bailout money by Bernanke. Bernanke, old Mr. Bernanke, FedAid went to them. It's unbelievable. He bailed out General Electric, not revealed, and we still don't know where about $900 billion in loans went, you hear? But, I mean, what am I going to do about it? The question is, why is the guy behind WikiLeaks still walking the earth? If Obama closed down websites that were peddling knockoff handbags, why did they leave the website up that was knocking down Hillary Clinton? The answer is in the question, which is no reason. That's why I don't want to talk about it. You follow what I'm saying? You know the answer. I gave you the answer 2 days ago. The reason Obama let WikiLeaks thrive is to take down his number one competitor for 2012. Any other questions? Because to me, that's my analysis. I don't think I'm wrong. And what else is in the news? I don't know. I have so many. I saw a story from San Francisco that I put up on my website just before the show. It got me so angry and so sick, I said, I don't know whether to tell the audience about it or not. Okay? Well, I'll tell you in rough detail. Women were walking with their two-year-old girl in like a big store. I don't know, what kind of big store it was. One of Kmart, let's say. They lose track of the little child for a few seconds. They turn an aisle. They left their hand go. They don't see her. They start to run around. They come back over the aisle, and a man is trying to rape the little two-year-old girl, pulling off her diaper and trying to have intercourse with a two-year-old on the floor. The women run after this animal, this disgusting animal, chase him out of the store. He almost got away. Two black homeless guys are outside raising money for a nonprofit. They run after the guy and tackle him. We're still trying to find out these homeless guys' addresses because I want to send them, you know, a big Christmas present. I got to tell you right now, we can't find them. I mean, this story has everything in it. It's astounding. It's shocking. I don't know how anybody like this isn't killed. Why should he be given a trial? I'd like to know why the man shouldn't be immediately captured, the videotape shown, and then put him into Pelican Bay in the prison yard for about an hour and give the guards a Christmas break for that 1 hour. Or send the man to Somalia. How in the world could this happen in this country that a man would try to rape a two-year-old girl? Well, okay. Let's just let that go. We have another story since you want politics. Senator Feinstein, she used to be known as Senator Feinstein, but after you hear what I'm telling you, you'll know why I call her Senator Feinstein. A former Defense Department Inspector General has called on Congress to investigate and oversee the vetting process for Muslim clerics who are nominated to serve as U.S. Army chaplains. Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it? To single out Muslim chaplains? Well, it makes sense to you. It's the same as at the airport. Why is your grandmother being strip searched? Why are nuns being humiliated? Why are children with braces on their legs being touched in their genitals by TSA agents instead of singling out those who might be carrying the bomb? So the former IG for the defense calls on Congress to investigate and oversee the vetting process for Muslim clerics who are nominated to serve as U.S. military chaplains. This is in light of the Fort Hood massacre, right? So he sends a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein, who I now call Feinstein. And you want to hear what she said? Here's what Feinstein said. Well, yeah, I got to read this. Here's what Senator Feinstein said to the congressional people. Quote, "We recently received the letter and staff is reviewing it carefully and making inquiries into how all chaplains are vetted by the Defense Department. Certainly chaplains should be carefully interviewed and backgrounds checked, comma, regardless of their religion." This is what you have for a senator now. This is what you have for a senator now. This is after Major Nidal Hassan, who was a part-time lay imam in the military, went on a rampage screaming Allah Akbar and then executed 13 people and killed and wounded 30 people. And this is what we have for U.S. Senator. And by the way, Senator Feinstein is the chairman of the, as I understand it, the security, I don't even know what they call themselves, Intelligence Committee. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine a country that we're living in that this is a senator? She's told specifically to make sure that the Muslims don't slip a Trojan horse in, and she says all chaplains should be interviewed. Now you wonder why you're getting your body cavity searched at an airport. It's because the government is out of control, and I'll be back.
Savage.
What do you want to talk about? Gingerbread cookies or politics or selenium or arsenic or recipes? I don't want to do recipes. I've done them twice this week. I'm through my cooking phase. I cook two meals at home. I can't wait to get out now to a restaurant. You do get a little, you know, cabin fever after two nights of it. Then you go to the restaurants and you can't wait to come out. That's the beauty of being an American. You can do it all. So what's going on with the tax cuts? Are they going to milk me for more money now or what? Taking more of my money, less of my money, some of my money, more of my money. I don't know what they're doing. To me, the whole idea of a graduated income tax is communism. You mean the more successful you are, the higher the rate should be? Why is that? You mean you get punished for being successful? Why is that? Why not a flat tax for everybody? You make $25,000 a year, you pay the same rate as a guy making $25 million a year. Why not? I mean, you're going to pay. Proportionally should be the same amount in a democracy, shouldn't it? If a guy makes $25,000 a year, let's say there's a flat rate of 10% of federal tax, he pays $2,500 a year, off the top, boom. A guy makes $25 million, so he should pay 10%, that's $2.5 million in taxes, and that's the end of it. Now he pays 40%, 39% of the $25 million. It's unbelievable to me. Where is the incentive to work harder? Well, people will work anyway, irrespective of it, and they know that. And that's never stopped governments from sending out the tax collectors. We know that as well. Take a look at the government. Here, you know, we have military leadership right now that is the most embarrassing in American history. We've got this guy, Mullen, who looks really good in a suit, but we have no idea if he's actually commanded a naval ship or fought in combat. But he's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And here's what he said today about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Admiral Mullen said that troops who balk at change in gay service policy can find other work. In other words, you can leave the military if you don't like it. And the other shame, I'll tell you who's the biggest embarrassment in history, is Gates. He makes me sick. Everything that Gates does is a nightmare. The man is a Stepford wife for Obama's radical left-wing politics. I don't know how Gates got here. I don't know how he got here. I'll take that back. He appointed me. He was appointed by Bush, okay? That's a big difference now between the policies of Bush and Obama. Real big difference. They're all lining up saying that if you don't like gays next to you on the front lines, that's okay. You'll stay there anyway. You can quit. The only one standing up to them is McCain. It's unbelievable to me. Mullen. Does anyone know if Admiral McMullen actually faced combat? And how did he get this job as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? I mean, we had some real bona fide war heroes as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff until this PR agent arrived. Is there anyone listening to this show who could tell me? I mean, you'll do a wiki search. I understand that. Does anyone actually know what Mullen did to wind up as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? And this, the Defense Secretary Gates, where did this Dr. Strangelove come from? He's in a long line of anti-military defense chiefs, by the way, that started a long time ago. The worst was McNamara. Remember him? Remember McNamara during the Vietnam War? So this is a long and continuing the same thing. That's why we're talking about topics other than this, because it gets me upset. I don't want to get upset. Tax cuts, tax hikes. Tax cuts, tax hikes. And what about the FCC suggesting more government control of the media? How will it affect me? Not at all. It won't affect me in the least. No matter what they do, I'll still be on the air. That's number one. And number two, if they said you have to do this, you have to do that, I could talk about nutrition and turn it into a political show. Listen, I could have survived in the Samizdat era of the Soviet Union. If I got on this show and talked about arsenic, you know that you would get messages through the discussion of arsenic that are political. Okay, to be very honest with you, there's nothing that can stop a man who really wants to get the message out. So no matter how draconian or backwards this left-wing fanatical Obama administration wants to get in controlling the media, they're never going to affect me one way or the other. I could do an entire show on foods and nutrition, and I could subversively tell you what I want to do politically, and what I think you should know politically in the nutrition show, and they would be hard put to figure out how to stop me. Okay, so go ahead. Take your best shot, because you're not going to get anywhere. It just shows you how frightened these Obama Marxists are, that they want to close down talk radio and tell you what you can do on the internet. Gee, I wonder what they're afraid of, Nancy Pelosi. What is Harry Reid afraid of? Well, they're afraid of the Tea Party movement, which wouldn't exist was it not for talk radio on the internet. It wouldn't be here, right? They want to control every avenue of your life. They want you to believe that having your child frisked by a TSA agent is for the child's benefit and that you should enjoy it. Well, okay, that's that. That's why I'd rather talk about arsenic and old lace than talk about this, to be honest with you. San Diego, Andrew, we have a political call. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I'm a PhD student and hope to reach your stature someday. But I think that the WikiLeaks scandal actually helps Hillary Clinton, because I think it makes her look like a bad lady, I guess, a badass is what I want to say. I'm sorry that I said
Let me see if I follow you. So, okay, I allege that the WikiLeaks were permitted to occur because Obama wanted to damage Hillary politically. That's why they didn't close down the website 6 months ago. Okay. You allege that it actually helped Hillary Clinton's image because it makes her look tougher, correct?
That's correct.
And let me explain this. The conservative movement does not trust Hillary Clinton and would never vote for her. So let's put them aside. The liberal base does not like the fact that she may have encouraged her staff to spy on other diplomats. That's what I'm reading on the blogs. They think it's terrible that she may have encouraged the staff to get DNA and other such information about diplomats and so forth. They're not very happy with her as a result of this. There's one thing the left wing doesn't like, which is any kind of government spying, because they all have something to hide. And they'd be afraid of a person like Hillary Clinton, who has a tendency towards this draconian attitude. I think that's how I see it. I mean, we could have a difference of opinion, but I don't think you're correct.
I think you make a good point, but I do think that the liberals at the end of the day are going to want to win in 2012, and Hillary presents an opportunity for them to do so. And with Obama,
no, that's another story. Unless something horrible happens between now and 2011, etc., Hillary will run against Obama in the primaries. There's no way this man can rescue his presidency, so far as I can tell, unless there's only a few things he can do to rescue his presidency. One, bomb Iran. Two, save the economy, which is highly unlikely given his background as a lifetime Marxist. I don't think he even understands how to save an economy because he's never held a real job. So unless he can save the economy and take Iran out as a threat, I don't think the man can be a viable candidate in 2012. So Hillary wins, but who are the Republicans going to run against? The Sarah Palin? Tell me how that ends.
I have no idea, Dr. Savage.
If Palin runs against Hillary, Hillary wins by 25 points. Palin cannot beat Hillary. Impossible. Impossible. There's no way Sarah Palin, because she's, you know, the Sarah Palin franchise has actually diminished politically rather than increased. Her popularity has gone up, but her political viability has gone down. It's inversely proportional. I'm the first one in the media to recognize that visibility does not equal electability. Put that down. Michael Savage said it, and don't expect to see it anywhere but on this show. Visibility does not equal electability. The caller gets a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, right here on the Savage Nation when I return. More.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
First, let me apologize to this august body for putting you in this very
Congressman, it's December, today. Not August.
And
let me remind you,
committee, I do recognize that it is not a job that many of us would want to have.
Right. I think he's the chairman of the Ethics Committee. In fact, it's like Libya is on the Human Rights Commission at the UN. It's about the same thing in Congress right now. Anyway, I don't know. Rangel was never one of the targets of my wrath for some reason. I always had a soft spot for Rangel. So he got caught not paying taxes for 30 years. Is that a big deal in America today? After all, he is a congressman. I mean, there have to be some benefits to the job. I mean, come on, lighten up here. I don't know. There was something about Rangel. And he was a rangy kind of, you know, New York guy. He never struck me as a... I don't know why. I have no feelings about Rangel in a negative. They voted 333-79 in favor of the punishment. And what's the punishment? A slap on the wrist. They censured him. Okay. And, you know, the saddest part is that he had to go back to his service in Korea and being overrun by the Chinese, which, you know, how can you laugh at a guy who lived through that? You can't. But why does he have to bring it up? Now he brings it up? Did you hear about that one? Listen to clip 19 with Rangel today.
And on that occasion in sub-zero weather, 20 degrees below zero, the Chinese surrounded us and attacked.
Wait. Is he talking about today? Sub-zero weather and the Chinese surrounded us? Oh, no, he's talking about Korea. Go on, please.
And on that occasion, in sub-zero weather, 20 degrees below zero, the Chinese surrounded us and attacked, and there were hundreds of casualties, wounded, and killed, and captured. Bugles blared and screams were heard, and I was wounded and had no thoughts that I would be able to survive.
So, I have a weak spot for any combat veteran who came back. Many of them come back and they've been, you know, ordinary or such as politicians. But how can you not, you know, admire a guy who risked his life for the country? That doesn't give him a right to evade taxes or not to do full financial disclosures, nor excuses for his omissions. I understand all of that. But when you compare this guy overall as a human being to what else we have in Congress, truthfully, this is not the worst of them. Okay, I'd rather look at Ben Bernanke, frankly, than Charlie Rangel. What Charlie Rangel did in avoiding taxes is nothing compared to what Ben Bernanke is doing in terms of giving out billions and trillions of dollars to a favorite uncle, so to speak. NBC and CNBC and MSNBC should be bailed out through GE. Are you kidding me? Now you understand why they get away with it. Now you understand why these sub-morons on these channels, particularly MSNBC, I've never seen anything like the level of stupidity that I see every day. Actually, I stopped watching them. In passing, I see there's one girl that is reasonably good-looking, but as ditzy as they come, I've never saw anything like it. This one is so dumb. I named her the dumbest girl in the history of the media. But why even mention that I'm picking on a girl and I don't want to be seen that way? I'm not a misogynist at all. And just to pick on her isn't right. I mean, some of the men are even worse, to be true to them. I mean, more vile than she is. But again, that's not good radio. Just to pick on the idiots of MSNBC doesn't mean it's good radio. I understand that. You've heard it before anyway. Thanksgiving is over. Christmas is coming. You don't have as much money as you wanted. You're not doing as well as your father did. In fact, you're doing worse than your father. You've reversed the American dream. You're working your way down the ladder of success. You feel ashamed. You have reversed the entire fortune of your family, but it has nothing to do with you. It was a tsunami that hit America. A tsunami that was engineered by people in the Managed Funds Association, in my estimation, to destroy the economy, to make you nervous, to make sure you'd vote for anybody except McCain. And you did. You voted for a complete nobody. And look what we have now. It may as well be the Friars Club who we have in the White House right now. The Friars Club may as well have elected Obama. 1-800-449-8255. Dave in Boston on WRKO. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. One of the things that I find most disturbing about being a commander in the Air Force and having to deal with men and women who have been on the front lines, who are continuing to serve on the front lines, and them not being listened to time and time again. But all of a sudden, we have a very, you might say, a glitzy political issue that all of a sudden they need our input. So they ask for our input, and then what do they do with that input? Well, they have made sure the three different ways that they collect this information that they've said we're going
to... Well, I want the average person listening to this show to understand, Colonel, what you're talking about. You're talking about the so-called survey of the men and women in the armed services about repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and whether they'd serve happily next to gay people, correct?
That's correct.
And what are you saying? They skewed the study in advance?
Oh, no, it's not even a skewing of the study. It's a totally disregarding of all the information collected. They're inventing what they want to go ahead and present either to the Congress or to themselves. And remember now, they hired a contractor to do this on one end, so the DOD has no control over that. They simply hired a contractor that sat on the other end of computers and you anonymously iChatted with these people. And I did this about 12 times myself.
Wait a minute. You mean this so-called survey of the military was done as a chat on the Internet? It was that unscientific?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's absurd. That's not a valid survey whatsoever.
Now, well, they asked a lot of questions, and it's really funny. You would hear, like, my people come back to me and talk to me about, they'd say, sir, you know, they asked me this, that, and the other. I said, yes, I got the same kinds of things. I didn't ask them what they said. I didn't care. That wasn't the point of it. The point was they felt like they're not being listened to, like it was just rote dismissal, because they would say an answer, and there would be...
Well, let's boil it down to brass tacks. In your estimation, do you think that the average person in the military would care one way or the other if a person who was openly gay was serving next to them?
It came down to brass tacks. If they were openly gay, yes, they would.
Why does openly gay as opposed to closedly gay matter?
Mainly because of the environments that we work in are not conducive to that kind of a lifestyle being present with the greater majority of people who are not of that choosing that lifestyle.
But how would that affect them? I'd like to know. I don't quite understand it. In other words, let's put aside their religious orientation and that they were taught that this way is not the right way and they don't want to be around it. But aside from that, how would it affect military operations?
You're taking a look at people who have to look at each other and say, you know, is the guy turned on by me as another man? Or a woman saying that kind of thing, too. That's a tension that we don't need existing in an environment like this. We exclude
interesting
people all the time for different things.
So in other words, let's take a situation like a submarine. A submarine where men live in such close quarters. This is not a laughing matter anymore.
No.
You're saying group cohesion would suffer, I believe you're saying.
Yeah, there would be a tension there that would not be, you would not be able to address it. First off, you got to take a look at the you might say, the militancy at one end of the homosexual community, and then the certainly not militants. I'm like you in many ways, kind of like what goes on there. I kind of don't care, just don't bring it into my, you know, my atmosphere. I don't need to be addressing it with you. I don't talk about my straight sex or my straight life and those kind of intimacy matters with people in the open, nor should it be that way. But if you're in a close quarters, intimacy setting where you're forced, especially in places like a submarine or in places where, say, a missile silo or in other places, so let's say an airplane for 30 hours when you're doing a long-distance mission, duration mission, or any of these other number of places, you're talking about a tension that you can't really even approach or talk about that easily. And if you do...
And then, of course, the lawyers are there ready to sue anybody who says a word or throw you out of the military or lower you by a pay grade if you dare express yourself. I understand what's coming. It's a shock to me that Mullen... How did Mullen become chairman of the Joint Chiefs? I know it's a political appointment, but does he have a background as a combat a naval officer? Do you know?
No, I do not know the details on the chief of staff. Sorry, I apologize for not knowing.
No, I mean, I looked it up on various sites, and I don't know. It's ambiguous. How does a man become chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who has no combat experience? I don't understand that part of it. You'd think it would be some combat Marine who fought in Vietnam or Iraq or came back from the special forces in Afghanistan and worked his way up. I never saw anything like this. The guy talks as though he may as well be just another suit in Congress wearing with a D next to his name. Dave, thanks for calling. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty for Christmas. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Am I the only talk show host who uses dumbbells during the breaks? I've been doing this since I'm a local host. I mean, I'm not a weightlifter per se. I don't know how I got onto this track. I was talking about food, nutrition, don't ask, do tell, whatever. And I realized when I first started in radio, I would bring a set of dumbbells into the studio, ask people. They were shocked. I've been doing it since I'm a kid. I mean, I have a set of dumbbells in every house I'm in. You know, 15, 20 pounds. It's amazing what it can do for your blood flow. It's as good as conducting an orchestra in terms of keeping the arteries open. You do some overhead push-ups and push, you know, the bar and some chins, whatever. And then you don't worry about abs. The main thing to remember as you get older is you could forget the abs don't matter as you get older. This obsession with the abs will kill you, I can guarantee you. Or do you want to look like a Somali beekeeper? I mean, for God's sakes, you want to look like a Somali wax? What's with the abs? Where'd this come from? All right, they look nice. I understand that. But if you try to push that ab thing after the age of 40, 45, you're really in for some trouble, I can guarantee you. The arms, yes. Yes. The chest, you don't want collapsing looking like your Aunt Minnie. I understand that. So you do push-ups, 20, 30 push-ups a day, and your upper torso is going to remain hard, okay? So what if you have a bit of a gut on you? It's like a gray hair. What is that? It's suddenly a mark of shame? What is it? What is this with the gray hair? Why is that? I guess gray hair is considered to be some kind of a spiritual loss in this country. Well, anyway, that's one man. Do you think that you have fallen behind in the great rat race? I love how people feel that they are not living up to the standards that their parents had for them. They fail their family. The economy is no good. They can't send their child to private school where they get cleaner drugs than they do in regular public school. Instead of going on five vacations a year, they only have three. And instead of having five cars and three houses, they have three houses and two cars, or three cars and two houses. And they feel that they have failed their children and wife. It doesn't. You have to remember what you really need as opposed to what you may think you want, what advertising has told you you need. I mean, maybe you've heard all of this before. How much do you really need? I got to tell you something, though, because it's just a chat show, you know, in some ways. After all, no one takes me seriously. You know, that's what the media says. Since no one takes me seriously at all, and all of the best-selling books were bought by dummies like you, not intelligent people who listen to ABC, CBS, and NBC and read the New York Times, I figure we should just talk amongst ourselves and have a chat. So let's have a chat, okay? I remember years ago when my kids were young and I was trying to achieve certain things I couldn't achieve, certain jobs I wanted I couldn't get. I don't want to go into the crybaby story, but I thought that I would die. I thought my head would explode. I felt like I was banging my head against a stone wall. The liberals had taken over the universities. They said white males need not apply. They were hiring the dumbest people imaginable in every department as fast as they could. They were filling the universities with the kind of people we now have. With the exception of some rare cases, such as in engineering and in the hard sciences, because they could not put dummies into those positions and function at all. But in areas like sociology, history, which they rewrote, they got totally illiterate morons, as you can well understand, which is why we have what we have now coming out of the Marxist university. So to bring the story to a head, I'm at an impasse. I worked all my life for this, couldn't get it. I felt like I was failing my children, failed my ancestors. I used to read about Japanese students who would come to America, and if they didn't get all A's, some of them committed harikari out of shame for their ancestors. And believe me, I wasn't too far behind in terms of what I felt, the loss and the shame, until one day I realized that it wasn't my failings. It was the fact that the ACLU and the other vermin had engineered society against the white male. And once I understood that the society was built to destroy the white male, then I understood what the battle lines were. And eventually in time, whatever, here I am many years later. However, what I'm getting at is I found out that at that time of need and want and loss, or shall I say the inability to complete my yearnings, my goals, put it that way, I read many, many self-help books. I remember many of them, and many of them were quite good. And I spoke to spiritual advisors, and many of them were quite good. And I learned many things that I carry to this day when I get into crises. Many, many things really did help me. And I can't, they're too numerous to mention. It's a great show for another time, self-help in crises and things of that nature. But one of the most important conversations I remember having during that period of want and loss was with an elderly man who was a former pugilist, a boxer, who had late in life become a rabbi. But when I say rabbi, I get a queasy, squeamish feeling because the word only means teacher. And what does that really mean? I mean, what does the word teacher mean? That gives you a holiness? Doesn't mean anything. I mean, you have a variety of teachers within every religion. Some are great, some are wonderful, and most are ordinary, like the rest of us, okay? This guy was not great. He was ordinary, but he had a common sense to him, common sense to his brain. Because he had been a pugilist and a street guy and then went into spirituality, as many people will do in many religions. And the best usually are those who rose from the streets and went back later in life to become a religious figure, let's say, in their communities and had no ego about how high they wanted to go. You know, they didn't want to wind up in the White House eating gingerbread cookies. Anyway, so this guy says to me, he listens to my story and he says, "What do you really need?" And I started to tell him what I wanted. He said, "I didn't ask you what you want." I said, "What do you really need?" He said, "What a man needs is a desk, a chair, a lamp, and a toilet, basically." I said, "That's pretty good." Meaning, all you really need is your health and the ability to read, to be a full human being. Now, that's the way this religious man saw it. Was he far from the truth? I would add a few things like maybe a wife or a girlfriend. That might have helped, too. But anyway, I think that was a given.
Savage.
A white sport coat and a pink carnation.
Marty Robbins. Where is Marty Robbins today? brings back so many wonderful memories. But why go down memory lane? It makes the show dated and old. You don't want a dated old show. You want something hip-hoppy. You want something with baggy pants. You want something with crack. You want something with Prozac. You want something that's dirty and filthy and culturally advanced. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, KSTE. What an affiliate that is. My God, it's so powerful. It's amazing. Tara, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, you wouldn't believe it. 1 minute after your Bilberry commentary, I'm in the vitamin aisle at Whole Foods Market, and there's a man with his father looking for Bilberry. And I was a little afraid at first, but I turned around. I was walking away, and I said, did you just happen to be listening to Michael Savage? And he said, yes. And he said, my father has poor eyesight. He always has. And we were just listening. I mean, literally, I just walked in there in the rain. And
Tara, radio is the most powerful medium in the world for getting a message across. I say that with total understanding of what you're saying. Don't be surprised that if you read tomorrow that Bilberry sales like went up, you know, 7,000% overnight because of what I said. Remember, I know what I'm talking about. I have a PhD in the field from a great university. I wrote 20 books in the field before I became a political commentator. So this is nothing new, you know. Tara, I'm sending you a Christmas gift, Trickle Up Poverty. But I want to say something. You know, many people don't understand that I could put out a line of vitamins, Dr. Savage's Bilberry, Dr. Savage's fish oils. I don't do it. I'm not greedy. There are people in radio, I've never seen anything like it. They sell you rugs. They sell you floor mats. They sell you earmuffs, eyeglasses. Isn't there a limit to how much they need or how much they want? There's no embarrassment. I mean, I can imagine the golfer putting out the golfer's Bilberry, a hole-in-one every time with the golfer's Bilberry. Or how about Wallbanger? Wallbanger could put out a line of Bilberry next. Let us see. Sean Wallbanger's Bilberry. Get that wallboard up in record time and never miss a nail. Or we could rename it from the Bilderberg Group to the Bilderberry Group. Maybe that would work. They'd give them a new name. The Council on Foreign Relations can change their names to the Council on Bilberry Relations. Maybe that would change. Or the CAIR group could change themselves from the Council on Arab or whatever, Islamic Relations. I don't even know what the acronym stands for. To the Council on Bilberry Relations. Maybe that would be a more user-friendly group, the CBR. And we wouldn't have the same negative view of some of these groups. Because it's a friendly organic product, Bilberry. Sacramento, Terry, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, Terry.
Dr. Savage, I want to say thank you for your message in the last hour when you were talking about how when you had your education and you had a wife and children's support and you felt destitute. And that's just how I've been feeling the last couple of days. And when you said that, I felt a whole lot better because I knew there's somebody else who's been through this. And
listen, Terry, time heals all wounds. It's an old, simple statement, but certain statements are true. You'll find out in time things will work out for you. In fact, it may not be what you currently intend or want. It could turn out to be 100 times better.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What did you get your degree in, for example?
Economics.
And at what level of education, Terry?
Associate degree.
Okay, so you're looking for what kind of job?
Just anything that would just pay the bills, basically. Right now, my job pays just right above minimum wage.
No, so that's not good. That's not good at all, and jobs are very hard to find right now. I know of a person who told me up in northern Marin County, or in Sonoma, rather, there was a job announcement for a warehouse guy in a warehouse, and there were 700 people looking for the warehouse job. There really is a devastating unemployment problem in the country, Terry.
Yes, there is. It's very terrible. And just when I heard you say that, I just sank into the chair in the car, and I felt very, very much better.
What I'm saying is don't take it as a personal failure. You're living through an economic tidal wave that you had nothing to do with. So if you get churned up in the waters, it doesn't mean that it's because you can't swim. And that's what I'm saying. Understand you're part of a bigger situation, and eventually God will take care of you. Let me send you a Christmas present, Trickle Up Poverty, Terry. It's all I can do right now. So let me give you want to go to self-help. There's a lot of people out there are hurting right now and looking for some little tidbits to hold on to them. You know, words are so powerful. Words are so powerful. You know, words can cure and words can kill. Do you know that? You know that between yourself and your wife, for example. Or you ever heard someone say something to you that cut through you, you never forgot it the rest of your life? I guess that's the difference between us and lower animals, to be honest with you. You know how much I love dogs and whatnot, and how I try to help gorillas and elephants through animal funds. But they're not us. We are different. And the thing that makes us uniquely different is, well, many things, but one of the things that makes us uniquely different is our ability to use speech. And the power of words is something that you shouldn't underestimate. Words can cut through you like a knife and stay in your guts for the rest of your life. Something your father said to you when you were a little boy, right? Positive, negative. I guarantee you many men walk around with the scars of those words. And anyway, I'm not here to be Dr. Radio, but the point is words are extremely important. So let me give you some words that may be of some value. So I told you I went through that dark time. I don't even remember when it was anymore. 1980, 81, 82, 83. In that period, I don't know who the president was. I know that none of them were any good for the average person, to be frank with you. None of them. In fact, I wasn't a big fan. I despised Jimmy Carter, but I wasn't a big fan of Ronald Reagan. And I'll tell you why. I remember what Ronald Reagan did to agriculture in this country. It's not that I'm a farmer. I'm a city boy. But under Ronald Reagan, the small farmer was almost wiped out in this country. He was a huge front for agribusiness. And I remember reading one story after another that really affected me of farmers who had been in the family farm for generations, basically driven off their land by the economics of Reaganomics. And their neighbors, their farmer neighbors, would go to their farm as their possessions were being auctioned off. And they'd buy their rakes and their hoes and their tractors and their overalls themselves. The people that they had grown up around were buying their own clothing during an auction to show you what went on. And some of the farmers killed themselves. They shot themselves in the barn because they were driven off their land. I mean, I remember writing about it. I don't know if it was ever published, but it affected me very deeply because, to me, the salt of the earth are the farmers, the bakers, people like that. They're the people that we all basically need for society to survive. You need the farmer. Let's start with the farmer. Without the farmer, we starve to death. Okay, you want to live in Zimbabwe, where we have to start importing food? The day America dies is the day I wake up and read that we're importing wheat. Then I know it's all over. The day I wake up and find out that the government is so screwed up that we're now importing wheat, I know it's all over. Okay? So that to me is a bellwether. I've always known since I'm a little boy that a nation's strength lies upon one thing and one thing only. Primarily, it's natural resources. Now, have we depleted our natural resources or not is another question. I don't think we're using our natural resources wisely or properly or sufficiently, to be very honest. The coal that we have locked up should be released. That Bill Clinton locked up, by the way. Cleanest coal in the world, he locked up in a national forest out in Utah. Low sulfur coal. You don't remember what Clinton did? See, many things have been forgotten. So anyway, let me get back to my main point because the other stuff is a little too esoteric. So again, so it's a dark period of my life. I don't know what I did wrong. How did I fail my children? I felt this shame after all these years of sacrifice for my degree. I can't get a teaching job because the society had moved against the white male. This is how I felt, okay? And it was true because the ACLU actually published a glowing paper saying some people's futures will have to be put on hold in order to advance others. I felt like strangling them. If I could have, truthfully, I could have become a very dangerous human being. But there's something decent in me that didn't turn me into a madman, to be frank with you. Instead of getting mad, I got even. So I would read a lot of books, self-help books. I don't know the names of them anymore. I remember some of the things I read. They were homilies, but you know what? They worked. I'll give you an example. I had insomnia during that period. I couldn't sleep because I was worried. I never wanted to take sleeping pills because I knew where they led to. You know, we know what that kind of medication leads to. So I started reading books. I read one book which said no one ever died from a lack of sleep. They died from worrying about not sleeping because we really don't need the amount of sleep we think we need, by the way. When you think about it, you look at guys who are up most of the night and then they go on a mission in Afghanistan at 4 o'clock in the morning, or they're up on a mission for a day and a half. It doesn't mean you want to live like that forever, but the point is the human being is capable of a lot more than you may think. You know, we're not weaklings. Maybe we've been told we're weak, but we're pretty tough as a biological organism. Perhaps one of the most adaptive organisms the world has ever seen is the human being. You talk about how I started the show today. I started the show today about NASA's discovery that a certain bacteria can live on a toxic poison called arsenic because the organism learned to adapt to the soil that had a lot of arsenic in it that would normally kill another organism. It learned to literally feed on that which killed its fellow microbes. That's like a human being. I don't care who you are. I can guarantee you your ancestors were just like you. And think about what they lived through in the old country, for example, if you want to go back that far. And so that's why I read a lot of books about some of the great tragedies through history. It sort of puts everything in context. And then the tendency that we all have towards complaining, and this bothers me, that bothers me, I don't have this, I don't have that. You think about what your ancestors lived through, the deprivation. It's a joke. We're all living like kings of that period. The most humble man in this country lives like a king in terms of what we have. But anyway, that doesn't help us because we're all jealous of the next man. So that was the sleep thing. So then he said, well, you don't need that much sleep. Instead of sleeping, he said, go out and look at the stars of the night and learn the star formations. Well, when I was a child, I loved astronomy. And I remember making a star box in the second, third grade. I don't remember what, where you take a black crepe paper and you put pinholes in it. I was so amazed by this, where you put the pinholes in the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, Ursula Major, Ursula Minor, and then you put a light bulb in the middle of the box, and it looks like a star formation. I thought it was magical. So I learned all the formations as a child and forgot them subsequently. So here I am, an adult, and I went out at night, a dark night, went out on the deck of my house, and I started looking at the stars when I couldn't sleep, 3 in the morning, 2. In fact, I started to get up. Instead of worrying, why am I getting up? I looked forward to it. I started to go out on the deck with a telescope and look at the star formations and write down the stars. And before long, I forgot that I had insomnia. Well, that's another example. Simple things will work for you. There were so many other little. I'll give you another one, quick one. Another one said, instead of sitting down and worrying, get up and run around the block. Instead of sitting down and worrying at that time, he said, send a letter to somebody. Well, send an email to somebody today. There's so much you can do with 5 minutes of your time. Instead of sitting there and fretting, you could actively do something. And that doing releases energy. And by releasing the energy, you're releasing the anxiety. And that's another problem with our society. The medico-pharmaceutical establishment has so brainwashed this society, all of the West, into thinking that the minute you have anxiety, you should reach for a pill, that they've crippled us and turned us into absolutely brainwashed victims. Which is why we have Democrats and Obama in the White House. I'll be right back.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame?
And a shame.
My tears fell in.
I'm going to become indifferent. I'm going to try indifference for a while. I think I'm going to become the average man, indifference. Maybe that'll work. Maybe I should be indifferent like you. That would be good. I would like to feel indifferent. Here's a news article just came out. George W. Bush note up for auction. They found a handwritten sheet. Apparently he wrote one handwritten sheet in his life. And that they're going to auction it off. They found that he can actually write. It comes with a mirror in case you want to buy this. And they say that the auctioneer says that it should bring at least $9,000 at his company's December 16th sale. This is a handwritten note, and Bush is very rare in such letters in the auction market. $9,000 for a note from George Bush, where he talks about the things he's going to do when he's president. He says, I will rescue children from failure. What, with no child left behind? Perhaps the worst educational bill in history, pushed not by George Bush, but by his liberal wife, by the way, Mrs. Bush. George Bush was a liberal president, not a conservative president in the main. 85% of his policies were liberal socialist. 15% of his policies were conservative. And so there's no child left behind. You ask any teacher what that's done to this society, and they'll all agree with me. It's wrecked the educational system. But anyway, all right, $9,000 for a handwritten note. Maybe I should auction off some of my handwritten notes. 1-800-449-8255. Jeb Bush says Sarah Palin is fantastic. What does that mean? Jeb Bush. Or he wants to run again till he's back in the news. That's just what the country needs. It's like another Clinton or another Bush. We didn't have enough for 16 years. We need another Bush now. I think he's dreaming. Oh, I see. Jeb Bush. So I see. He sees a Bush-Palin ticket. Good luck, Charlie. That one will never fly. That would never, ever fly. That ticket is unelectable west of the Okeechobee Swamp in Florida, whatever. I can never pronounce those Indian names, the Seminole names. The Okefenokee Swamp, Okeechobee Reservoir. Every time I fly in over Florida, we go in over the swampland. And then you come in and you see the strip and you wonder at the amazing structure of the earth. You come in over the Gulf of Mexico. You're coming from the West Coast out of New Orleans. You fly across the Gulf, of course. And you hit the west part, and there's some civilization, and then a swamp. It's swampland, if I ever. It's like the swamps with the cars that fly on the water with the fans on them. I don't even know what they call them. As a kid, I always wanted one. In fact, I'd like to have one right now with the big fan in the back, the Everglade car. Maybe the iChinese could put one out. The Everglade car, you know, it's like a green car. And from the swamps, the Okefenokee, Okeechobee. Do you know the difference between an alligator and a crocodile? That's an amazing story unto itself. You talk about adaptation, how one animal adapts to salt water and one that looks just like it adapts to fresh water. Most people don't know alligator from a crocodile, right? It's a tough... they're both from the same stem. They came from the same House of Lords way back in the Triassic. But look how animals adapt. It's the same way we'll adapt if we have, let's say we have a climactic disaster. See, I have an interesting idea about global warming that I've never really expressed that I should share with you. And you're probably going to be shocked by this. I don't believe that man's activities on Earth are responsible for the change in temperatures that we're seeing. That doesn't mean that I'm in favor of man's activities on Earth. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I would like to see us move past fossil fuels. I'd like to see us using solar energy. I have for at least 50 years dreamed of that age. I mean, I still have high-powered sports cars and boats that guzzle fuel. You know, when they come up with a sun car that runs as well as my 1,000 horsepower Caterpillar diesels, you know, I'll get back to me on that one. I'd be glad to have my boat move at 23 knots on solar power. It'd be great. But until that day, I'll continue to pay for the fuel that I so desire. But the point is that when I was young, I read a couple of books by Emmanuel Velikovsky. One was called Earth and Upheaval, and the other was Worlds in Collision. I must have been 18, 20 years old. I was a young student in science. They changed my whole view of the universe and of the cosmos. Earth and Upheaval, and Emmanuel Velikovsky, a Russian-American. So he put together evidence such as, how do you explain whale bones found in the mountains of Vermont? And such anomalies that you would never expect. And he explained that Earth has not gone through a gradual evolutionary process to bring us to the landforms and the climate that we now know, but Earth has gone through violent, violent revolutions in its history that come about suddenly without any advance warning. And we all know what that could mean. That could mean Earth tilting on its axis. It could mean a solar flare that burns us out. It could be the sun, another solar flare that dies the other. So in other words, we have dramatic situations like this. So I do believe that we're going through climate change, but it has very little to do with what we are doing on the Earth, and there's very little we can do to stop it. However, I've always expected a collision to occur, perhaps another comet. And I think that some of us will survive and adapt if we have to start all over again. Man is a very tough creature. Very adaptable. Whether the comet will hit you or me is another question. We'll have to deal with that tomorrow, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We begin today on michaelsavage.com, where I've culled the best stories from around the nation and around the globe for your political pleasure. Top story to me, Uncle Sap bailed out General Electric, MSNBC, and NBC with your money. We heard it was called stimulus funds, TARP, whatever you want to call it. But it turns out Ben Bernanke was a liar, and that the whole scam of melting down the economy was a lie, and that in addition to bailing out foreign banks, they bailed out General Electric, Caterpillar, etc. And in bailing out General Electric, it means they bailed out the perverts and sickos on MSNBC and the useless idiots on NBC. So there it is. Wikigate releases more information, and cables, they're encrypted emails from the State Department about Cuba show links to terrorists from Colombia and Spain are hiding out in Cuba. So I guess the conservatives weren't wrong all along about Cuba, were they? Michael Savage to write two thrillers. The combative talk show host, am I combative? Signed a deal to write two thrillers for St. Martin's Press, the publisher said. Also on the website, in arms treaty tussle, what would Reagan do? That's a long article. Who knows what Reagan would have done? He's gone and been, you know, dead and buried. Click here for Teddy gear. That's a picture of Teddy for those of you who want to dress up like a dog for Halloween. CNN writes, glowing profile of Wikigate creep. They love him. They can't get enough of him. Sympathy for the devil. We let in some crazies. Cameron says UK went soft on radical Muslims. Really? Still on their list of banned, though, Michael, huh? Illegal alien beats and blinds a 78-year-old widow during a burglary. Jose Perez Gonzalez, 31, an illegal immigrant who was living in South San Francisco, broke into the woman's home and beat her almost to death with an iron pipe. Then he fled to Mexico. Counter spies hunt Russian mole inside National Security Agency. National Security Agency or National Insecurity Agency? You decide, I report. Amnesty vote. Senate takes up Dream Act number 5. Yeah, it's a dream, all right, for the illegal aliens. Senator Feinstein refuses to vet Muslim chaplains for military. This story you can't believe. She used to be known as Senator Dianne Feinstein, but we renamed her Senator Feinstein because a watchdog group has called on Congress to investigate national security threat posed by military's imams. The military's imams. And Feinstein refuses to single out Muslim imams for further review, saying all chaplains need to be reviewed. Now you know. Now you understand why your old grandmother and nuns are being strip searched by the TSA. It's because of women like Senator Feinstein. Speaking of stained people, an ACLU-related judge is told to step down in a gay marriage hearing. That's right, his wife is a former director or related to the ACLU. Shocking. 1,000-man militia being trained in North Somalia. No kidding. And we don't do anything about it with the most advanced technology on Earth. What's the technology and military stuff for? House GOP leadership kills Pelosi's committee on global warming. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Now we go past my stories in, let's see, they're all about me in the middle. The New Yorker article, if you've read it, it's good. The interview in Playboy, she's better looking than I am, I admit. We go down the page. Suspect in Hollywood publicist's death killed self. I lost my past and my future. That's the poor man whose wife and daughters were killed in the home invasion in Connecticut. A nightmare. NASA discovers alien life form in California. Arsenic-tolerant microbe. An arsenic-tolerant microbe. I don't know whether they're talking about the hosts on MSNBC or some type of microorganism, but we'll look into that one. Speaking of barbarians, there's an article, when barbarians lose fear of cops. Google to pay couple $1 for street view trespass. Screw them. I don't like Google. I don't like what they do. I don't like Google Earth. I've always said it was a danger to our national security. Man marries his dog, saying it's just pure love. Okay, we knew that was coming. White Christmas predicted for 50% of country. Of course, not in Al Gore's hometown, because even God is afraid of Al Gore. They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety, says Benjamin Franklin, written about 1775. So have we given up any essential liberty to obtain a little safety? Oh, you betcha. You betcha. You can see the Aleutians. You know, you can see Russia from the Aleutians. You betcha. That's what's on michaelsavage.com. And remember, stop Obama from destroying our national security. Okay? By Christmas, I insist you buy Trickle Up Poverty and read the whole book and get back to me. You're getting your final exam on December 26th. And now we go to other news that didn't make it to michaelsavage.com. Is there any other news? Or is that the best news of the world? Well, there's lots of other news. In Georgia, hundreds are lining up in the cold for help with heat. Funds for heat. Heat funds. Funds for heat. That's interesting. NASA discovers life built with toxic chemical. That's arsenic. It lives on arsenic. I don't know whether they're talking about people or bacteria. The House just voted 234 to 188 to raise taxes on the rich. That's you and I. Dems have voted to saddle small businesses with job-killing tax hike. No kidding. Income redistribution, anyone? And while you slept, Harry Reid has pushed four versions of the DREAM Act without any hearing whatsoever. He's back to his secret tricks. Speaking of secrets, the federal bank under Bernanke is still withholding who they gave $885 billion to in loans. Maybe that'll come out on Christmas Eve. A man sought an L.A. publicist's death kills himself. That's shocking. At least 40 die on bus caught in Israel forest fire. Unprecedented disaster, worst in nation's history. Bed bugs invade New York City hospital, entire floor shut down. Speaking of bed bugs, Charlie Rangel is going to be admonished somehow today, but the Dems have pushed for a lighter Rangel punishment. After all, he only evaded taxes for 30 years. McCain says it's premature to end military's ban on gays. McCain standing up for something? Shocking. Eight sets of remains buried in same plot at Arlington National Cemetery. That's shocking, just shocking. Shocking, I tell you. The lame duck session of Congress is Obama's last chance to force this president's radical communist agenda down our throats. You know, America has voted out Pelosi's left-wing cabal, but they're back one last time, to try and raise taxes on Americans who actually drive the economy.
On this vote, the yeas are 234, the nays are 188. The motion is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
This lame duck Congress ought to be cooked and laid upon the table. At least John Boehner is about to replace her.
The majority is holding a vote to raise taxes on American families and small businesses. I'm trying to catch my breath so I don't refer to this this maneuver going on today as chicken crap, all right? This is nonsense. The election was 1 month ago. We're 23 months from the next election. And the political games have already started trying to set up the next election.
And Mitch McConnell, the gobbler, is standing up to Obama, finally, to block his tax increases.
Republicans have pleaded with Democrats to put aside their wish list, to focus on the things Americans want us to focus on. They've ignored us. The voters repudiated their agenda at the polls. They've ignored them. Time is running out, and they're ignoring that. The election was a month ago. It's time to get serious. It's time to focus on priorities. Now, a while ago, I delivered a letter to Senator Reid signed by all 42 Senate Republicans. It says that every Republican will vote against proceeding to any legislative matter until we've funded the government and protected every taxpayer from a tax hike. Basically, what it means is first things first.
And Harry Reid, why, he's still in a dream world. Harry's trying to pass the DREAM Act, in order to placate his controllers in La Raza.
Oh, I'm confident and hopeful that we can work our way through all these things. That is, we're going to make sure that we still are going to move forward on the firefighters. We're going to move forward on the DREAM Act. We're going to move forward on the 9/11 New York situation. We're going to do something on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We of course, have to do something to fund the government through next year or into next year, and we have to do something about the tax cuts. All those things are on my agenda.
What about Michelle Obama? How do you feel about her as a symbol of Christmas? Here she is unveiling the White House Christmas decorations.
In many ways, this is really what the White House is all about. And I say this all the time, it's the people's house. It's a place that is steeped in history, but it's also a place where everyone should feel welcome. That spirit of kindness and generosity is really what the holiday season is all about. And it was the idea behind this year's theme, which is simple gifts. Because in the end, the greatest blessings of all are the ones that don't cost a thing. The time that we spend with our loved ones, the freedoms we enjoy as Americans, and the joy we feel from reaching out to those in need.
And guess what the health-conscious First Lady did? Why, she's hired a pastry chef. A pastry chef to make a 350-pound gingerbread house. Not a carrot house? Listen to this.
Here at the White House, we have 19 Christmas trees in every corner of the White House. We have a giant bow made out of pipe cleaners. We have 350 pounds of gingerbread house that you'll get to see that took our wonderful pastry chef Bill Yasses and his team an entire month to create.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The conservatives are now the liberals. The liberals are now the conservatives. The world is turned upside down. Bob Dylan's song was really written for you, the town hallers. Listen to it.
Face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway.
They are now the people in the trench coats. They are now the people spying on the people who oppose the government. The federal government is now filled with ex-potheaded LSD types who are now become their worst enemy. So everything that the 60s stood for in many ways, the good things of it, let's put it to you that way, the libertarian side of it, the civil liberty side of it, is now being crushed by the Obamaites now that they have total power. And I knew it in the 60s who they were. I always knew the left were the fascists. I knew it every time I ran into them who they were. I knew them. I knew many of them in those days. And I dropped them like fleas on my body. I had to use like hair lice to get them out of my body. My whole life I had to get the lice out of my being, the lice of San Francisco that I unfortunately associated with. I was taught as a child, if you lie down with lice, you're going to wake up lousy. It took me years to get the lice of San Francisco out of my hair. I'm a loner, I admit it. I don't have any friends. I'm alone. I have a dog and a family. What more does a man need? So I've been thinking about it. You know, we're talking about extreme exercise and how it's harmful, and a guy called and said he's a martial arts teacher, and he agrees with me that he teaches, you know, a different flow, and this is about gathering the energy fields and using it in the martial arts. And I said, I know what chi energy is because I use it on the radio. And he said, yes, you do. And I was thinking about that on the way into the studio today about where the heck does my chi energy come from? I mean, where does it come from? I don't even know. I honestly don't know. I was walking in the streets of San Francisco today, and I was thinking about it. I mean, it'd be nice to put a halo on my head and say, I get it from God. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? Sometimes I pray to God. I don't definitively go to a house of worship to pray to God. I ask God every day, 6 to 7, 8 times a day, to forgive me. That's all. Now, does that give me energy? I don't know. Maybe God knows that I truly mean it. There are people who go into temples and churches, and they try their best, but there's no sincerity in their heart. And I think God doesn't like insincere prayer. I think he likes sincere prayer, people who are genuinely understanding of how flawed they are. So who knows? But then I don't think any of that really matters either. I don't know where my chi energy comes from. Maybe it's inborn. There was a study of twins. They did one study after another of twins. I'm not a twin, And they, some twins are separated at birth, and then they meet each other 30 years later. They find out every life phase of one twin is the same life phase of the other. They got married at the same age without knowing each other. They got divorced at the same age. They had turned. Everything was the same. It gets same profession because it was encoded in their genetics. So I started to think, you know, although I've been a self-willed person all my life, on a philosophical level, I'm starting to say, I don't know, maybe it's all genetically encoded. But I don't believe it because I was almost dead in this earth many times. And I prayed to for God to save me and give me a living. I told you that's how I got into radio. And I never stopped running since because it came. See, I said to God, give me a living. Because no matter what I did, I earned a PhD, I wrote 8 books, and I was still thrown onto the ash heap of history by liberalism. Why did I rise back up from the ashes? How did that happen? Well, I prayed, so here I am. But I also made a commitment, and the commitment was get rid of the lice that you know. Don't talk to them. Don't let them near you. They undermine you. They're jealous of you, and they are. None of them amounted to anything. I don't even mention their names. I knew many people in San Francisco who thought that they were writers and poets. No one ever heard of them. They were nothing. They were frauds. They were poseurs. You should have heard them walking around with the image that they had of themselves, who they were. The world was going to know them years later. Nothing. Busted suitcase. Zeros. Does it make them bad? Yes. Economic crisis we're living through keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Bailout after bailout keeps throwing money at the problems, but they don't seem to be cutting spending as I call for and trickle up poverty. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Mark Calabria to talk about this administration's attempt at so-called quantitative easing, which really means printing money. This is a confusing topic to most of us, but what they mean by quantitative easing is printing money. Why are they doing this now?
Well, let's start with the description of what exactly quantitative easing is and how that fits into monetary policy in general. We often look at how the Federal Reserve tries to impact monetary policy by its manipulation of various interest rates. Most of the time, the Federal Reserve simply tries to push up and down short-term interest rates, mostly the federal funds rate. Now, the way it does that is it goes out and it buys short-term securities, almost always short-term treasury bills. And so since most short-term rates are benchmarked to the short-term treasury bills, the thinking is if you bring down short-term treasury rates, then other short-term rates in the economy will also come down. Now, what quantitative easing is that the first round of quantitative easing last year was the large-scale purchase of mortgage-backed securities with the intention of trying to bring down mortgage rates. What is being called quantitative easing Part 2 is an attempt by the Fed to bring down long-term interest rates by the purchase of longer-dated Treasury securities, 7-year, 10-year instruments, some 30-year instruments, where they're trying to bring down the long-term rate. So this is very different. Really, this is the first time since the 1950s that the Fed has been trying to play in the long term, the long end of the market in terms of interest rates rather than the short term market. There are essentially sort of two reasons for that. One, short term rates, federal funds rates, are essentially zero. So you can't, at least not in nominal terms. Certainly real terms interest rates could be negative, but in nominal terms you can't be negative. So the Fed has done almost all it can do in the short end of the market in terms of interest rates. And so where else do you go but the long end of the market? And the second reason is that a lot of investment and a lot of decisions that consumers make, for instance, mortgages, but also business investment, is more tied to, say, the 7 or 10 year time span. So the attempt of the Fed is to try to bring down those longer-term rates in order to lower the cost of mortgages, but also to make investment more attractive, and also to try to get more lending out there in terms of the economy to keep businesses going that way. Obviously, the objective of most of this, particularly on the business investment side, is to try to create a demand for jobs so that we can bring unemployment down.
And we all know this won't help. You think it will?
I don't think it's gonna. I don't think it's gonna help, and I don't think we've had very much success at all. And I would. We should start with. There's pretty much an understanding among economists and the consensus that the level of inflation has almost no relationship to the employment market in the long run. For instance, anybody who would go back and look and remember the 70s or the 80s, you know, we had what was called stagflation. You had increasing inflation at the same time you had increasing employment. There's a framework that economists use, sometimes called the Phillips curve, which is this historical relationship found in Britain that, you know, if inflation goes up, unemployment goes down. Now, this was a relationship that really came to light and was talked about in the 60s. Once the Federal Reserve tried to start exploiting that relationship, it broke down. And so since at least the mid-60s, there has essentially not been a trade-off. You can't find a trade-off in the data between inflation and unemployment. So the thinking that we can sort of just inflate and obviously to draw this out a little bit more, the thinking is with inflation is that if you change the interest rate or you change prices in a way that essentially in the short term confuses investors, confuses employers so that they think that there's more demand out in the economy than there actually is and that they'll go out and hire and you'll get the economy going by essentially tricking people. I mean, and that's essentially what the bet that the Fed is making. There's a lot of evidence saying you can't even really do that in the short run anymore. So, and I think the evidence of the last 2 years where the federal funds rates has essentially been near zero without having any noticeable effect on improving the labor market, you know, is some evidence in my mind that these interest rates are not going to turn the economy around. And then I will say as an aside, I don't put myself in the double dip camp. You know, I think we have seen a slow increase in consumption. We've seen a slow increase in GDP. I would argue, and I would argue this was even the case before Obama was even sworn in, we've been headed in the right direction. It's just been painfully slow. So the risk of this turned into a Great Depression are long behind us. Importantly, what we've seen over the last 2 years is really a disconnect between the labor market and the overall economy. And I'll note there's also a disconnect between the housing market, but I think the explanations for that are quite obvious. We simply just built more housing than we actually wanted. But you generally see a very tight relationship between overall GDP and the labor market. And the common sense explanation of that is, of course, as people buy more and produce more, you hire more to do that. And you even see that coming out of recession, so that when the economy starts to grow, people start to hire again. You really have seen over the last year and a half, 2 years, that breakdown. The normal relationship between hiring and the economy has stalled. I mean, for instance, the Atlanta Fed has put out some estimates where if the labor market had followed the growth in consumption in GDP that we've seen, the unemployment rate should be under 7%. So the real question is not, is there a lack of demand in the economy that would drive the labor market, but rather, why is the labor market going its own direction? And I think anytime you have a situation where we've had over the last year and a half where you've actually seen overtime increasing, but employers unwilling to hire, you know, is something that I think you really need to look into what's going on in the labor market. Part of this is clearly being driven by uncertainty, and you know, the one of the uncertainties is simply economic. If you're a manufacturer, you're a retailer, and you're selling or producing more, you don't know how much of this is going to be sustainable. So you meet that immediate demand with, I'm going to get more out of the workers I have without hiring more workers. Obviously, there are limits to what you can do with that. You cannot expect all your workers to work 100 hours a week. For instance, there's a limitation to what you can do with your existing labor force. My own opinion is I think we've gotten close to the point where, and for many employers, past the point where they can simply just meet the growth in the economy with existing labor force. And I think that's why the last couple of months you've started to see private sector hiring go back up. Now, another part of it is, and this is something you see in the housing market as well, the housing market has adjusted. In any normal economy for any good, and it's important to keep in mind, as much as it might be uncomfortable for some people to think about it this way, labor is like any other good. It responds to supply and demand. It responds to price effects. And we have seen throughout the last couple of years very large increases in the benefit costs of labor. For instance, even before the health care bill was passed in 2009, health benefits for manufacturing employees increased by 10%. So you've seen throughout this recession that labor costs have remained high and have been increasing. And just like any normal product or any good, if the demand declines and the price stays up, then you will get what we call excess supply, which in the labor market is termed unemployment. So some of what is going on in the labor market, in my opinion, has clearly been a factor of you've had benefit costs go up and you've had compensation be flat, if actually increasing in some sectors. And given a weak demand, demand has come back up, but demand has not increased enough to offset these increased costs. Now, this is where you get the logic and the thinking from many of my friends of the Keynesian persuasion who argue what we need is more demand, because they would see that the increased demand would offset the increased costs that you see in the labor market. Now, I do think that there are essentially limits. There are limits to the extent to which you can simply consume more than you produce. So I think one of the things that needs to be looked at is essentially what's going on in the labor market. I think that's where most of our attention should be. There are real limits to how much monetary policy can fix rigidities in the labor market. And, of course, some of this is just a matter of time. Once again, we produced a lot of things we ultimately didn't want, which the biggest example of is housing. And so there is no quick way, for instance, to turn a carpenter into a nurse. There's going to have to be training with that. And, of course, monetary policy itself cannot turn a carpenter into a nurse. So some of this is just going to be a matter of time, in which we have been seeing. For instance, last year was the first year in all of Florida history that they lost population. I'm sure from the perspective of Florida, that's a painful thing, but from the perspective of our overall economy, it's an important thing to see people move into sectors of the economy and to areas of the country that are growing. And indeed, there are areas of the country that are growing. We are not completely in a recession everywhere, and we're not completely in a recession in all sectors. So somewhat you need to have those adjustments. Normally, when you see a recession that happens quite quickly in the past and recovers quickly, it's because there has been some sort of decline in demand, and you can get back to sort of essentially doing the things you were doing before. Quite simply, I don't think that that's an option this time around. We really cannot. We've tried 2 years plus of stimulus of trying to get the housing market back to where it was. I think that's been a mistake throughout the case, but it clearly hasn't worked. And in many other things, such as the cash for clunkers, once again, what we tried to do was get back to the bubble of 2005, 2006, rather than trying to build a foundation for the economy to grow in a direction in which we are producing goods and services that people actually want to consume.
Hey, thanks for the report, Mark.
Thanks again for having me anytime.
I spell all of this crazy stuff out in Trickle Up Poverty, where you see clearly the Obamaites are trying to push not only socialism, but something far worse down onto America's heart and soul. It's there in black and white. Buy it for Christmas and learn what we can do to get back on the right track. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
I don't like this song at all. I didn't pick it. I don't like it. I'm going to play only things I like because it's memories. That's all. And most people don't like this music anyway to begin with. It's antiquated, old. It's like a 55 Buick Roadmaster. Who would drive a rusty Buick Roadmaster? Nobody. Well, if it's restored, it's another story. Hold, let me pick a rock and roll tune. Can we talk about anything except politics? Unless there's a great caller. Unless there's some great callers. I don't know. Let's clean the board off here and start all over again. I don't know if I want to do politics now. I want to go into something else. Pig's feet, tripa, whatever. I can't eat tripa. I can't eat it. The idea of eating the guts of another animal, I can't do it. I told you that it's not alien to my culture. My mother ate brains. She ate intestine. I puked when I looked at that stuff, but all right. She ate it. What are you going to do? She lived to 88, so she must have known what she was doing. God bless her. Who could eat brains? I don't get it. Not only that, I mean, it turns out that, you know, you look at all these organ meats you talk about from a point of view of health. According to our hysteria about cholesterol, they're no-nos because you can't eat liver, high cholesterol, we know that. Even though it's fabulously rich in iron and other minerals that we all need, which explains why many of us are deficient in these nutrients, because we've given up some of the most important parts of the animal, like the liver. You should have liver once in a while, by the way. Forget your Lipitor and your insanity. Okay, have a piece of liver every once in a while. You'll find out that you have more energy than you've had in years. The iron that would run through your system, you finally feel like a man again. You wouldn't need Viagra and you wouldn't need the Lipitor. You feel like a human being again with something between your ears. I was going to say something else, but it's a family show. So I wouldn't say go to the brains department. That is, the brains are the most cholesterol-rich organ of the cow. And secondly, you can get Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease from eating uncooked brains. That's something that I don't want to go into, but it's related to the Lou Gehrig's disease, so to speak. That was a part of my PhD dissertation. You don't want to mess around with uncooked brains. We have enough of them in Washington. Not funny. Okay, throwaway line. Whatever. Now I want to just drift. I want to be like a manatee in the intracoastal. I want to be like a pelican flying over Boca Raton in a soft wind. I want to be like a bluebird on Al Jolson's nose. You want me to just do word jazz? I'll do word jazz. I just gave you three pieces of word jazz. I could play a tune to those three couplets, couldn't I? Is that like a bluebird on Al Jolson's nose? That's a nice image, right? It's almost a Maiku. That's also funny. That, for those of you who know what I just said. Maiku as opposed to haiku. You didn't catch that one? Okay. That was a Maiku. Bluebird on Al Jolson's nose, manatee in the intracoastal. You ever see those pelicans flying over that strip of land in Florida? It's astounding. The pelican is one of my favorite seabirds. They're allegedly they're kind of like green dinosaurs that adapted to the times over millions of years. Now, they're once pterodactyls, and they figured out, okay, that game is over. All right, let's re-engineer ourselves. That should take about 10,000 years. Cut down on the legs, cut down on the body. You don't need all that girth. We're going into a new age. It's pretty bad out there. Meteor hit the earth. Less to eat. So shrink it up, girls. We're going to lose some weight. We're no longer going to be pterodactyls. We're going to be pelicans. That thing about penguins really gets to me. Holding the egg. The father holds the egg and the mother goes swimming. My God. I'd like to give to a pelican society. Is there a pelican saving group or something? Whale killers, I'd like to personally put on a harpoon myself. I think that we have to stop the whale murderers. I really mean that. It's heartbreaking to let the Japanese and the Norwegians kill those animals. Never mind the clubbing up there by the drunks in Alaska. Yeah, everything is ethnic. The ethnic excuse to beat them to death with a club. So, oh, I'm sorry. It's your ethnic right to slaughter a whale. Pardon me. Oh, you're different than everybody else on the world today. Go club seals to death because it's in your culture. Go ahead. Anyone says anything, you're a racist white male. Go beat a seal to death, a little white seal pup with a club. Call yourself a man. Go ahead. Vote for a Democrat. I'm getting such beautiful letters. By the way, I want to take a moment now. I finally, folks, all of you who've sent donations to the Savage Defense Fund, I can't thank each of you by name on the show, and I'm sure many of you don't want to be thanked by name on the show. You'd rather remain anonymous. I finally had a list printed up, so I'm getting some feeling of who's sending because I never look at it. And I want to thank each and every one of you individually, but I can't. I'm going to be sending you a letter soon to thank you. That's all I can say. And certain amongst you, I'm going to get a book. I'm going to send you a book. It's all I can do. It's all I have to give you. I thought about something today in bed before I got up. I said, you know, the other animals feel, they can be sensitive, they have emotions, they can love. Not perhaps in the same way a human can love, but I'm not so sure of that. In other words, I think my dog loves more purely than a human ever did. If I go out for 10 minutes, he jumps like crazy. He doesn't know it's 10 minutes or 10 years. Crazy, jumping, loving. You know, it's something to behold. It's almost painful in a way to see an animal so attached to you. So, okay, love, they say, is a divine human emotion, and I'm sure it is. But it's not unique to the human animal, okay? It's also seen in the animal world as well. An ape can love, a dog can love, etc. I'm sure many other animals that you get to know can love you. But what does the human being do that lower animals, so to speak, cannot do. Speak, articulate language, and write. And so the thing that distinguishes man from other animals is his use of language, my friends. Think about it. So when we have a society that is so debased by the media, where a rap song is held up to the level of a rhapsody, where Beethoven and a gangbanger are held up in the same level, you understand that we're descending, we're not ascending? Do you understand that we're going backwards, not forwards? Do you understand why when a person sits and text messages or emails all day long, they're actually diminishing their IQ? You understand what I'm saying? You're actually devolving as a creature. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.